What makes someone a leader? Why is leadership such a crucial skill to develop? We're answering these questions and more in today's episode of AEC Perspectives. I'm your host, Brian Nickel, Chief Strategy Officer for RSNH, and I'm pleased to be joined today by Tom Everett, Vice President of RSNH's Infrastructure Strategy Team and a key thought leader in our industry. Tom is an accomplished transportation executive with extensive knowledge of government operations and business practices and a proven ability to navigate complexities, manage crises, and drive change. Tom spent 38 years with the Federal Highway Administration, ending his phenomenal career as the highest-ranking civil servant as executive director, where he served in that role for 4 years. Tom has a strong people-focused leadership style backed by a commitment to diversity and inclusion. Welcome to the podcast, Tom.
Thank you, Brian. A real pleasure to be here.
Well, let's just jump right in and talk about leadership and get some perspectives from your amazing career and all the things that you've experienced throughout that career. Let's start off with what are the most important skills for a leader to have?
I tend to look at it this way. We all have a toolbox we carry with us throughout our career. And we start with a basic set of skills when we begin our career. And that's tools in the toolbox. And those skills come from our upbringing, our education, our experiences in life up to the point we start our career, our values, and things like that. And then we add tools as we progress through our career based on new experiences and maybe some training that we take during our career. And then, of course, just learning from our colleagues and peers in our career. And to me, the most successful leaders are those who can use their tools to motivate and inspire others towards a common goal or a vision and help guide those people that they work with towards that, towards success in accomplishing that vision. So it's leadership is not something that comes with a job title. I've seen leaders in action at all levels in an agency or in a company, in all types of positions, not just those that have leadership in the title. And again, to me, what matters is having the right tools in the toolbox that allow you to be able to motivate and inspire others. So I wanted to touch on that question. And then maybe spinning back to the most important skills. And to me, that depends on the situation. I'm very much a situational leader. And I think then tying it back to the toolbox, it's really making sure you have the tools in your toolbox that you can draw upon as needed for the situation you face. I've identified a skill set that I think is needed in every leader's toolbox. So it's maybe think of it as the basic tools, the screwdrivers and the hammers, and the foundation for a good leader. And it's something that when I was executive director for Federal Highway Administration, I quite often get asked to talk about leadership. And so I coined it my Sweet Seven. After talking about them several times, it actually grew to eight, but I couldn't come up with a cool title for eight. So I stuck with Sweet Seven plus one.
I love it. So as you went through your career and now are in the executive director position at Federal Highway, you've got thousands of employees that are reporting to you, an immense responsibility across the United States. And so as you're talking about leadership, you've developed this Sweet Seven plus one. So why don't you dive into that and tell us what those are? And we'll add that one at the end and call it the magic eight.
Yeah, and you in particular will really appreciate that number eight, given your career and where you've been. And I just want to clarify that I don't claim that I had all these tools fully developed in my toolbox when I started as executive director, but I found them to be skills I needed to work on in some cases. I had room for improvement. And so that's another point is, you know, I don't think anyone should view their toolbox as fully developed at any point in their career. At the top of my list, I think a leader needs to demonstrate the ability to stay positive and calm under pressure, because as you progress in your career, the number of stressful situations you're going to encounter is going to increase. The issues become more complex, and the decisions certainly become more difficult. Another thing to keep in mind is that the number of eyes that are watching you as you rise in your career and grow into higher leadership positions, your moves are being watched. Everything you do is being watched by a lot of people. People need to see confidence, right? They need reassurance that despite the chaos going on around us, that leaders have the ability to stay in control. And that also gives confidence that the decisions you make are rational. They're not heat of the moment decisions. So at the top of the list, for all those reasons, a leader to me is someone who has demonstrated that they can stay positive and calm when under a pressure situation.
And in fact, when you're in that situation and you are positive and you are staying calm, it sends a message to everyone within your purview and how you're approaching.
Yep, absolutely. I just want to share what was going on when I first became executive director. We were at a point in our history of where the country was becoming more divided on issues than I've ever seen before. People had short fuses. They were very emotional on a lot of different issues that were going on. Within FHWA, we were experiencing a budget shortfall. So I had just instituted a hiring slowdown, I called it. It wasn't a hard freeze, but we definitely put the brakes on hiring at a time when our workload was probably more than ever, because we were also very busy working on not just running a $50 billion a year program, but also preparing for the next Highway Act, the next legislation. So, and then along comes the pandemic and a change in political leadership. So you can just put all those pieces together, and that is the most stressful situation and time in my career. And I would say any other leader across the country in any situation felt very similar pressures and stress. And I quickly realized how important it was to staff in Federal Highway Administration for them to see me continuing to do my job in a calm way and providing them reassurance, because that's what people needed at that time more than anything else, is we're going to be okay. We're going to get through this. We don't have all the answers right now, but we're going to figure it out as we go. And so just really, that's just the most recent example, but so many times in my career where I saw that skill being so important.
And I love this notion of staying positive through adversity, through crisis, through chaos, when everything is flying around you, that ability to center, keep your positive attitude and stay calm as you're making those decisions, that carries you through that crisis or through that chaos that you're currently experiencing.
Absolutely. Carries you, but also carries the people that are looking at you as a leader. Number two to me is never losing your focus on quality and the customer. That's true whether you're a government employee serving the public or work in the private sector you're dealing with your clients. But really important to me to pay attention to details and trying to get to yes. That was kind of a theme I used for staff in Federal Highway Administration. Obviously there are legal boundaries. I said, let's never get outside the law. That's not what this is about, but it is trying to get to yes when the customer asks, can I do X, Y, or Z? Our effort should be on trying to get them to yes. And to, at the end, be proud of your work, which ties back to quality. So that's number two. Number three ties into communication. I don't think anybody would be surprised to see that on my list here. Clear communication and frequent. And that, the frequency, also became really important during the pandemic that we went through, is just keeping people, especially when we're all apart, we're not in the same locations anymore. The important to just keep in touch with people and let them know what was going on was critical. And I'd say how you communicate with your employees really drives the type of relationship you have with them. So going back to what I said about a leader, they can motivate and inspire others. You've got, the only way to do that is through communication, and the type of communication is critical to that. So it's got to be clear, it's got to be direct, got to have motivating statements included in that communication, constructive feedback when it's necessary, and then listening as well, as a form of communication. So listening to the needs and input of staff. That was number three. Number four, just rolling on through here, is treating everyone fairly and honestly. This is like a very basic skill, but one that's so important to a leader, that again, I would look as I was selecting leaders, right? Once I moved into the executive director position, that was a role I played, is to make the selections for the top leaders in the agency. And I would look for evidence that, that they had, they, people, candidates for jobs had a history of being fair in how they treated folks and were respected. You know, as a leader, you don't always deliver good news. And a lot of times, you know, it's not great. It's bad news. And so if you're not very good at that, that's a skill set to work on. And you remember, Brian, I said, I didn't claim to have all the skills I needed. That was one I found I needed to improve. And so I found ways to do that.
And I would say too, that it's foundational. As you develop that, it becomes something that you can carry with you as you treat people fairly and honestly, openly, and put whatever the issue is, even in the most difficult times, put it on the table in a fair and appropriate way. And that is appreciated by those that you are in fact leading.
Absolutely. I you probably are the same. You've had people, when you do that, people say to you, well, wow, I really don't like that news, but I sure am glad you told me about it, right? Or you were transparent with that. And I separated this one, but number five is be inclusive. Work hard to ensure that everyone has an opportunity to contribute. Again, this was another one where I knew my tool wasn't fully developed. I didn't have a very sophisticated tool in my toolbox here. So I would go out of my way to try to do things to make sure I was being inclusive. It's just so important for engagement. Engagement is something that we would measure through customer or employee surveys. And I'm proud to say, I think our engagement levels in Federal Highways were the highest they ever were when I left. And I think it was partly because throughout the agency, not just me, we were working hard to make sure everybody had a voice and an opportunity to contribute. Number six is being open to new ideas. Leadership is being open to the new ideas and being willing to get outside your box, even when it makes you uncomfortable. So that's on my list. And then number seven was, it's okay to change your mind. You may need to adjust the position you took on an issue, and that's okay. To me, I always looked at that as good leadership. If somebody dug their heels in on an issue, right, and just simply became defensive of a decision, totally opposite of leadership. And it would happen. It would happen at the highest levels. But that's why that one made my list.
Well, and as you present that, it occurs to me that being okay with changing your mind is a hallmark of flexibility. And as leaders, we don't always know what's around the corner. But when it comes around the corner, or when you go around the corner and you're in a new situation, the ability to assess that and change the course or change your decision to reflect new circumstances is, in fact, you know, carrying that flexibility along with the responsibility to continue to do the right thing.
Yeah, no, well said. And then the number eight, the one that doesn't fit my sweet seven, was political savvy. And again, I added that to the list because I was mostly focused on looking at the people I'm selecting for higher leader positions in the agency. And it was so important to have this skill set. It's not one that most people certainly don't have in their initial toolbox when they start their career, but develop it over time. And it's also one that I find has different definitions to different people. I kept my definition very simple. It's really just being aware of what's going on around you, in your workplace, in the field that you work in your industry, and politically. And then relate how the decisions you make in your position may impact those things that are going on, or how those things going on impact the decision you make in your position. And it's just really important, again, particularly in the role that I was in and we were in Federal Highway Administration, the decisions we made had large nationwide impacts and a lot of times involve very sensitive political issues. So political savvy was certainly a skill that made my list as the plus one.
Let's change it up a little and talk about challenge. What is, in your view, the biggest challenge facing leaders?
I've got three things that pop into my mind right away. And so I'm going to give you three. I don't know which one's the biggest. It might depend on the situation. But I think today, leaders at every level, at any level of sophistication of their toolbox, is dealing with change. Change is coming at us so fast and furious, and not just technological change, but policy change, political change. It's all around us. And as leaders, we need to be ready to deal with that and figure out how, as a leader, you do deal with change, right? So that's one of those tools in the toolbox that if you're not good with change, at handling change, you might want to find some ways to enhance that skill set. You know, an example, Brian, is electrification of vehicles on our highways, right? New to many of us in the highway industry. I know when I was with Federal Highways, who would have thought, you know, we build roads and bridges. That's what we were good at. And who would have thought that now we're the lead agency on putting charging stations on our highway network across the country. Heck of a learning curve. Makes sense. And I'm not questioning that. I'm just saying it's change. It's different. And it is something that even, state DOTs and locals and all of us across the country are just trying to get our arms around right now. And we need to. We need to do it quickly. There's a lot of money in that area that right now that needs to be put to good use. And so we all need to change and learn very quickly. And I think that as a leader, that your role is kind of vital to helping employees cope with that change by helping them understand what's driving it, the uncertainty that surrounds it. It's like, hey, we don't have all the answers right now, but this is what we need to do to move forward. And then how to use it to learn something different and maybe more effective and a better way of doing things. So look at change as an opportunity as well. And I think there's also a connection to resilience, not resilience the way we've been talking about it a lot lately, like the related to our infrastructure and the ability of our infrastructure to withstand the things that it's facing nowadays, but resilience of you as a leader, right? How you react to change. Again, you're being watched more than ever. You're being observed at all times. And so thinking through how you're reacting to change is really important, and learning to deal with it in a constructive way and viewing it as an opportunity, I think, is really important. So that's category one, dealing with change. I think the second one, and this is one we've all gotten better at as leaders, and that's virtual leadership. So I think, critically important, because we've talked about some of these skills. We talked about the importance of employee engagement. We didn't say a lot about culture, but the culture of an organization is is also important to employees. And so thinking through as a leader, how do you do those things when we're not in that office environment that many of us were used to and kind of developed our career through? We're now in more of a hybrid environment. And even as we speak, maybe shifting back to an office environment in many cases. So it's going to be a thing we have to deal with as leaders for the foreseeable future. You know, whether it's finding effective ways to communicate in this situation without that face-to-face interaction, maintaining that culture that I mentioned, finding ways to keep employees engaged, and then just more technical, but just maximizing the online tools that are available. You know, not too many years ago, I didn't even know what Zoom was, right? So now I'm fairly proficient. but it's really important, I think, for leaders to understand virtual leadership. And then the last category is not new, but it's certainly one that we really, especially today, can't take our eye off of, and that's time management. Really crucial to working efficiently and productively, and time is an asset. It's kind of the way I look at it. We need to treat it as such. We need to value it. We need to, going back to communication, you need to make sure that your communication is clear, so that you can avoid wasting time on misunderstandings. You need to delegate as a leader resourcefully, right? Know the resources you have available, where the strengths are, and use that. Delegate when you can to tap those resources, and then find ways to minimize interruptions, right? This is not new. Time management has been something we all learn about very early in our careers. Even in college, you've got to learn, but now the demands for all of our time is more than ever. And so I think this skill set is one that remains a challenge. And so I'd say they're my three. I could go on, but I'm thinking number one, dealing with change, number two, virtual leadership, and number three, just time management.
Well, those are big challenges that face all leaders. And I like how you weaved those together. So dealing with change, understanding this new hybrid environment that we're in, and doing it in a way that manages not only your time, but the time and is considerate of the time of others. And exactly. So that suite 7 plus 1, those tools help you meet many of these challenges.
And they do.
I like the connection between your suite 7 plus 1 and meeting the challenges that are facing everyday leaders. And in this modern era of constant change, virtuality, and 24/7 in many 24/7. Respects, time constraints and time commitments and time pressures that we all face. So really appreciate that. That approach that you look at these challenges through this new lens. And I want to ask you to kind of talk about that as you've transitioned from the public sector, a long career of 38 years into the private sector. What do you see as commonalities around these? And what do you see as maybe some differences?
A ton of commonalities that, you know, I could have, if you had asked me to produce a list of what I thought were the most important leadership characteristics today, you know, several months, almost a year after joining the private sector, my list would probably be identical. The skills, like I, when I started that list, they're your basic tools. And so I don't think it matters where you work. They're the fundamental skills that you need. There are differences. I think what I've noticed, it's not so much about leadership, it's just understanding how things operate, if that makes sense, right? 38 years, I knew government. I know how government operates. I know what goes on you know, in the public eye and what goes on out of the public eye and how you end up with what you end up with in the government. And that it's, I'm still learning in the private sector, right? Those same things happen. It's just different. And the motivations are a little bit different. And so for me, just on one, learning and understanding what those things are in the private world that are different, is important. So I think from a leadership perspective, I'm kind of hitting a reset button a little bit, right? I'm going back to almost in some of my tools, to just a basic screwdriver. And I need to build on that to better understand what it means to be a leader in the private world. But I'm going to draw upon those same basic foundational skills.
And I think that's why your sweet seven plus one are so important for our audience to hear, because you can apply it, whether it is in the public sector or in the private sector or in the nonprofit sector. Yeah. And that sort of application of those basic leadership tools can get you so far in your career.
Very true.
Let's kind of switch and talk about, if we can, some different mindsets for leaders. So, you know, Gallup, according to a recent poll, roughly 70% of the reasons people give for their resignation relates directly back to their manager or direct leader. How do we change the management mindset of that leadership, and how can we set up leaders, and especially our future leaders, for success?
Awesome question. And I think one example is to do what we're doing here today. We're just talking about it and sharing some experiences, right? Thinking back to my sweet seven, you know, if you're not being inclusive, if you're not communicating, if you're stuck in doing things the old way, you're not open to new ideas. Who wants to work for someone that's like that? That's why people leave. So again, it's foundational. Point back to the sweet seven. If you work on those skill sets, you're taking a step towards changing that mindset and getting turning people who might be more managers into leaders, right? I always looked, a colleague of mine used to describe it this way. A manager is really good. They're a juggler. They're really good at keeping all the balls in the air and not dropping any. But a leader is someone who can do that, plus move forward. They can walk towards some vision or goal while not dropping any balls. And so it's the difference between a manager and a leader. But I think to the question, Brian, I think a responsibility of ours is to clearly articulate the behaviors we want to see in a leader and then model those behaviors. We can also do things like provide growth opportunities for leaders who are looking to add tools to their toolbox or maybe just sharpen some of their tools. Another is to provide meaningful and constructive feedback. That is something that's always a challenge. You don't want performance discussions to be just two times a year that you have a date on the calendar, and that's the only time you talk to your supervisor. It should be continuous, and it's on leaders to be that, going back to communication, right? Very, very clear and constructive in the feedback. That's only going to help folks who are not maybe as far along in their career identify those tools that they may need to work on and link them to the growth opportunities that are available to help them develop those tools. And so thinking back to what I said earlier, leaders motivate and inspire. So another thing we can do is identify leaders who are having success and lift them up, highlight, celebrate their success. It's a great way to show others what your expectations are, right? These are leaders we admire. Look at what they've done. We're celebrating their accomplishment. And then I think one message from that is, oh, now I see some skills that I need to work on or I need to develop so I can be one of those leaders that is being highlighted and celebrated. So I think in summary, I'd say, one, we can communicate and reinforce what is considered leadership. Two, we can celebrate successes. And then maybe three, provide opportunities for staff to learn and grow.
You know, we all as leaders have certain times or moments or events that help shape us either directly or indirectly. And in that context, there are times where the importance and your role as a leader is thrust into the open. Can you talk about one of those?
So I got to go back to 2007. And this was August of 2007 when the I-35W bridge collapsed in Minnesota. So although I had been in leadership positions, and by that I mean they had the leader attached to the title, because you got to think, I said, we have leaders at all points in their career. But so I'd say, although I had the title leadership, I really didn't feel like I was much of a leader, at least not in the public light, until this incident. But I was perfectly happy. We didn't touch on it much, Brian, but I came up mostly as a bridge engineer in Federal Highway Administration. I think 20 plus years of my 38 were in bridges and structures. And I, you know, anybody who's a bridge or a structural engineer or a technical engineer can get this, but, you know, we find happiness in being behind the scenes, not being out there. But I was in a position here where I was thrust into being a frontline leader for FHWA and responding to a lot of the challenges that followed the collapse. But let me just tell the story. It was kind of interesting, I think. I would say before I tell it, as I tell it, think about what you would do if you were in this situation, right? I'm saying that for all the listeners. But so it was started, the bridge collapsed in the evening. I think it was August 3rd. And so then my phone started ringing off the hook at home. I remember because I was helping my daughter with homework and it was on TV. And my wife said, you better come look at this. And then the phone started ringing. And the next thing I know, I was asked to be on a plane out of D.C. with the Secretary of Transportation, who was Mary Peters at the time, our administrator for Federal Highways, who was Rick Kapka, and then just about every elected official in the Senate and House from Minnesota on a plane headed to Minneapolis, because they were all in D.C. for some reason. I forgot the details, but my main purpose, as it was explained to me, was to be the technical guy and answer whatever questions they might have as we flew out there. And then as we were on site, any questions that came up that were technical, I could be there to help. So while flying to the site, I was literally on my knees in the aisle, drawing pictures of trusses and gusset plates and trying to explain what things like functionally obsolete and structurally deficient meant. These are all terms that people have probably heard about now. Not easy, but I really felt in my element, right? This is my wheelhouse. This is what I did every day. But my purpose, my understanding of my purpose, and certainly my comfort level changed very quickly. I remember we took a break. We had gotten on site. Secretary Peters had done a press conference. I think we met with the mayor, and I was just running around following the group and answering questions. And then we broke for lunch. And I was in line behind my administrator, and he took a phone call, not a long phone call. And he turned around and he said, "Well, Tom, we need to eat fast because in 15 minutes you're doing a press conference." And this isn't, you know, just me and a reporter in a room. It was a sea of cameras, as you can imagine, helicopters overhead, so much noise you really couldn't hear the person you're standing next to talking to. Talk about that high stress situation. This definitely was high stress. And I said, "Okay, well, what's my role? What am I supposed to talk about?" And it was basically, "I don't know. You're going to follow the state bridge engineer. Just back him up. Whatever he says, back him up. That's my role." So fast forward, we get to the site where they were hosting these press conferences. We're late because the traffic was a mess. So we literally are running through the field to get to the spot. I take my spot in line, and the state bridge engineer makes his comments. And then he says, now I'm going to turn it over to Tom Everett from Federal Highway Administration, who's going to explain what structurally deficient means. Okay. No easy task, right? In front of, I don't know how many people were glued to this, to the television at that point, but it was a lot. And here I'm going to take a term that even I probably didn't fully understand and try to say something that makes sense to all these people. Because let's go back to what we were talking about, the importance to stay calm, reassure people that you're in control, right? You've got this. And to this day, I'm not sure I can tell you exactly what I said, but the feedback I got was very positive, very reassuring to me that I didn't make a fool of myself, that whatever I did say was comforting and reassuring to folks, so that they weren't afraid to get in their car the next day and drive across the bridge somewhere in the country. You know, it's like bridges in America just don't fall down. We're going to find out why. You know, it's just explaining it in terms that people can relate to. So I was put into that pressure cooker. I came out of it good as far as the feedback I got. The only critical feedback I got was actually from my wife, who said, I look like a deer in the headlights. So, which I'm glad. I appreciate the honest feedback. But then from that point in time, getting back to the leadership topic here, I became the point person for the agency. We went through audits by the Office of Inspector General, General Accounting Office, media inquiries unlike anything I've ever seen. Just, you name it, people were pinging us for information, and I was the point of contact pretty much for all of it. And so, like it or not, ready or not, I had to be a leader. It wasn't a role I pursued. I certainly didn't have all the tools in my toolbox that I needed, but I was working very quickly on developing those tools and learning what I could from that experience. And one thing I really gained, and I'm not saying this to pat myself on the back, but I gained a lot of confidence in myself, in my ability to lead as a result of this. And it was based largely on just the feedback I was getting from people. It's like, you're doing great. This is, you know, we're so glad it's you. And just reassuring things to me as a leader that kept me going and continuing to do those kind of things. And certainly my leadership moment, I've told that story many times, and I just feel like that was it. That was what changed my career and got me to where I ended up as executive director. And Brian, I bet you've got a story, because every leader I've talked to has, when I share my story, they've got something similar, and it's just amazing to me how that works.
Yeah, mine is strikingly similar in many respects. It was one of those unexpected moments, an event that you hope never happens, and an event that has wide-ranging impact across the country, and yours did, because there were other bridges that were like that bridge.
Oh yeah.
And so there was a follow-up role that you had to undertake as well that took leadership and took accountability and responsibility. And so I'll highlight mine now that you've asked, because it's very similar. And so my second day as commissioner of the Indiana Department of Transportation was September 11, 2001. What we all know and will never forget was an attack on our country, on our soil, in the heart of New York. And you may think, oh, well, what does that have to do with Indiana and the Indiana Department of Transportation? And I'll tell you, as your second day as commissioner, you've got the governor calling an emergency cabinet meeting. We are in the process of closing down all the public use airports, which we had responsibility for. We mobilized our big snow trucks to block off, and now, you know, it's just normal that government buildings have barriers or barricades or some sort of protective measures against attack. And so we were doing that on the fly as I was spending my second day, and had time in the agency, of course, prior to that, but responding immediately to deep concern. Are there other attacks? Is this going to spread across the country? And, you know, as we saw, then the Pentagon get hit. And so you really didn't know what was next. And as it turns out, I was at a maintenance unit on my second day to tell and illustrate to the maintenance staff of the Department of Transportation, 2,500 strong at the time, that they were as important as anyone else. And in fact, greeting them at their start of the day, where their critical mission was to keep our bridges maintained, keep our roads safe, make sure signs were in the proper place, and make sure that the snow was plowed in the winter and the potholes were patched in the spring and summer. And that was, in fact, a leadership moment, because I was with the core of our maintenance staff, where I thought I needed to be to communicate our mission. And they brought me into the room and said, "You really need to take a look at the TV. There's some pretty major stuff going on." I then get, you know, my phone starts ringing, my pager's going off. And so I have to then take off from that moment where they experienced 9/11 with me with them. And I said, "Look, be on alert. We have to look after our critical infrastructure. So as you're out there across the state, I'm going to need you as an extension of the administration and the state to be vigilant. And we don't know what is next." And so a lot of uncertainty, a lot of chaos, a lot of concern. And I was thrust into that moment, as you might imagine. We had to open up our toll road to get the heavy equipment out to New York. So this was not the time to have extensive permitting mm-hmm. discussions, but was rather, you know, one of those times where you say, "This is an emergency. So let's get all hands on deck to do all the kinds of things that we needed to do to ensure safety for the people of Indiana, but also to support those in New York and Washington and elsewhere." An unknown event, a horribly tragic event that was put me in a leadership place where then, you know, we had follow up things like what you mentioned, the follow up to create and really look at your infrastructure in a much different way. What is critical? What is a crossing over a river, and how do you protect it? How do you enhance it? How do you maybe install cameras or barriers, those kinds of things that we now do as a matter of course. So like you, Tom, I had that leadership moment put me in that.
That's place. A terrific story. And I'm not surprised that you had that moment, Brian. Like I said, every leader I've talked to has a story. And I'm just thinking about my list of characteristics, and I'm just thinking how important it probably was, or it was, for you to be that calm, positive leader at that point in time. Just everything going on, and the country just very confused about what's happening and uncertain whether we were all at risk at that time. And, you know, a leader just leader stepped up across the country, right? And did sort of like we did in the pandemic. You know, you do what you have to do, but you have to do it in a way that doesn't cause everybody to freak out. And it sounds like you did a terrific job, and also just being open to new ideas. You know, you mentioned the permitting. It's like, why, let's not get stuck on permitting issues right now. We can deal with that. Let's get the you know, vehicles and equipment where we need to be to deal with this. And I could draw upon so many of those characteristics in that story you told, and just see you applying it, based on what you said.
That's I harken back to that time and that moment, and I think about your Sweet Seven and how I utilized those, some unknowingly,
right,
and some sort of almost a matter of instinct, but that then saying, how do I create that as a leadership character and quality going forward? How do I enhance that? What kind of training do I need to be calm in the toughest situation, to communicate, to be inclusive, to recognize that not only was I scared and a whole bunch of people in our country scared, but our workers were scared. They were faced with the unknown. They had families at home that they didn't know, you know, am I going to have to watch this bridge for the next, 48 hours or
right,
48 days on duty? And so it was one of those moments, as we have in our careers, that shape us and help mold us into the leaders that we become. And you, likewise, taking what is what became a national and international bridge collapse, facing a sea of cameras where you had never done that before.
Nope.
And had to draw on your experience, but then took that experience and turned your leadership into that Sweet Seven, enhancing your own qualities.
And that's why it goes back to when I said, as I tell my story, and now you've told yours, I encourage listeners to put yourself in those positions. Think about, are you ready? How would you react in that kind of a position? And if you identify some areas where you think you might need to strengthen, now's the time. You know, don't wait for that chaos to happen and test your leadership capabilities. Get ready. Work on those skills now.
Thank you very much for taking time to listen to this episode of AEC Perspectives. We hope you found the discussion on leadership insightful and engaging. If you enjoyed this episode, I have great news for you. Tom and I will be continuing our conversation on leadership in next week's bonus episode of AEC Perspectives. So make sure to tune in next week and join us for another great episode of RSNH's AEC Perspectives.